Now, as we move forward, we'd like to further talk about the Chibu civilization, which emerged after the decline of the Moche culture, flourished along the northern coast of Peru from 9th to 15th century CE. The Chibu people built a highly organized and centralized state with Chanchan as its capital. Chanchan is an archaeological site located near the modern-day city of Trujillo and is considered one of the largest adobe cities in the world, covering approximately 20 square kilometers or 7.7 square miles. The site consists of several walled compounds known as citadels or palaces, which are residents of the elite and ruling classes. The layout of Chanchan reflects the Chimu's urban planning and architectural skills. The cities were divided into 9 distinct citadels, each with its own ceremonial spaces, residential areas, and administrative structures. The citadels were interconnected by the networks of roads, canals, and plazas, showcasing the Chimu's advanced infrastructure. The Chimu was renowned for their mastery of adobe construction. The walls of Chanchan were adorned with intricate and elaborate reliefs depicting various motifs such as animals, mythical creatures, and geometric patterns. These reliefs provided insights into Chimu art, culture, and religious beliefs. Despite their impressive achievements, the Chimu civilization eventually faced decline and was conquered by the Inca Empire in the late 15th century. The Incas incorporated elements of the Chimu culture into their own, but Chanchan lost its status as the political center of the region. Today, Chanchan is considered a UNESCO World Heritage Site and is important archaeological and historical attraction. Excavations and ongoing research continue to provide valuable insights into the Chimu civilization and its significance into the history of pre-Columbian Peru. As we have somewhat been discussing all along through the last several chapters, we have discussed the Inca Empire and their conquests. The Inca Empire, under the leadership of Pachacuti, experienced significant expansion during its early years and managed to conquer various ethnic groups and territories in the Andean region, including the Chanca, Quechachui, and Chimu. Pachacuti, also known as Pachacutec, became the ninth ruler of the Inca state around 1438. Under his leadership, the Inca Empire underwent a period of rapid expansion and consolidation. Pachacuti initiated a series of military campaigns that resulted in the conquest of neighboring regions. One of the notable conquests during Pachacuti's reign was that of the Chanca, an ethnic group located in the southern Andes. The Chancas were a significant rival to the Inca, and their defeat solidified the Incas' power in the region. With the defeat of the Chancas, Pachacuti expanded his influence over the territories and incorporated them into the Inca Empire. Furthermore, as we see, Pachacuti extended Incan Empire over the Caicas speaking people who inhabited a vast area in the southern Andes. Through military campaigns and strategic alliances, Pachacuti succeeded in subjugating the various Caica ethnicities and integrating them into expanding the Inca Empire. A notable conquest of the Inca Empire under Pachacuti's reign was the coastal Chimu civilization. The Chimu, as we've discussed before, were a powerful civilization along the northern coast of Peru, with their capital, Chanchan, and with Pachacuti's very extensive military campaigns and political maneuvering, he was able to successfully conquer them and incorporate their territories and resources into his new Inca Empire. These conquests not only expanded the territorial boundaries of the Inca Empire, but also increased its wealth, resources, and political influence. Pachacuti's military success laid the foundation for the subsequent expansion of the Inca Empire under his successors. Pachacuti's reign marked a significant turning point in Inca history, establishing the Inca Empire as a dominant force in the Andean region. His conquest laid the groundwork for the Inca imperial ambitions and set the stage for further expansion and consolidation of that empire in the following decades. Pachacuti, the ruler of the Inca Empire with his massive military campaigns, was very successful. That resulted in the conquest of various ethnic groups and territories, including the Chaca, Pachacuti, Chimú. These conquests expanded the Inca Empire's reach and solidified their power in the Andean region, paving the way for further expansion and establishment of one of the largest pre-Columbian empires of the Americas. So now, as we move a little bit further, let's go to the north. The formation of the Panamanian land bridge around 2 million years ago played a crucial role in shaping the biological and cultural diversity of the two American continents. Before the formation of the land bridge, North America and South America were isolated land masses with distinct ecosystems and species. The separation led to the evolution of unique plant and animal species in each region. For example, species like llamas, alpacas evolved in South America, while bison, bears, and wolves developed in North America. These distinct ecosystems and species composition influenced the availability of resources and ecological niches for human populations. The migration of humans from Asia to the Americas is believed to have occurred primarily, as we said before, through the Bering Land Bridge during periods of lower sea levels around 20,000 and 12,000 years ago. These separate development of North and South Americans' flora and fauna meant that human populations, as they made their way over, encountered different environments, resources, and challenges. These contributed to the diversification of cultures and settlement patterns across the continents. In North America, various indigenous cultures developed complex societies, such as the Mississippian culture in the Southeast, the ancestral Pueblans in the Southwest, and the Iroquois Confederacy in the Northeast. These societies exhibit advanced agricultural practices, monumental structure, and social complexity. In South America, civilizations like the Inca, the Moche, Navaca, and Maya in Mesoamerica arose with sophisticated agricultural systems, monumental architecture, intricate cultural and social structures. These civilizations developed advanced agricultural techniques, including terrace farming, irrigation systems, and sophisticated crop management. Those two distinctive evolutionary paths really lay the groundwork of how these two distinctive cultures have developed. The availability of different resources, ecological adaptations, and cultural practices played a significant role in shaping the diversity of indigenous cultures and their respective settlement patterns across the continents. It is important to really recognize the rich cultural heritage and diverse histories of the indigenous people in both North and South America, which are all shaped by millions of years of separate development and evolution. The geological separation of North and South America until the formation of the Panamanian land bridge around 2 million years ago resulted in distinct biological and cultural developments in each region. This separation influenced the pace, patterns, and diversity of human settlements in Americas, with unique ecosystems, resources, and cultural practices shaping each indigenous civilization that arose on both continents. Especially in North America, the introduction of maize, or what we often refer to as corn, beans, and squash from northern Mexico played a significant role in the transition to the sedentary culture in Southwest region of what is now the United States. The agricultural trios, commonly referred to as the Three Sisters, provide a reliable and sustainable food source and supported the development of several communities. The cultivation and consumption of maize, beans, and squash in the Southwest are believed to have started around 2000 BCE. These crops offered several advantages that contribute to the transition from nomadic or semi-nomadic lifestyles to sedentary settlements. Maize, with its high caloric value and versatility, became a staple crop that provided a reliable food source. Its cultivation allowed for the production of surplus foods, which could be stored and used during periods of scarcity. Maize could be processed into various forms, such as grinding it into flour or cooking it as a nutritious food source. Beans, as well, when grown alongside maize, offered a complementary nutritional value. Beans are rich in protein, in which combined with maize created a balanced diet. They also help replenish the nitrogen content in the soil, enhancing the overall productivity of the agricultural system. Squash, with its vining nature, helps suppress weed growth and conserve soil moisture. Its large leaves provide shade, reducing evaporation and helping to maintain soil moisture levels. Squash was also a valuable food source, providing vitamins and nutrients. And the cultivation of all three crops allowed communities in the Southwest to establish permanent settlements and transition from the hunter-gatherer lifestyle to one centered around agriculture. Sedentary communities could focus on agricultural activities, leading to the development of more complex social and economic cultural systems. Also, with the introduction of a newer variety of maize, known as maize de ocho, played a significant role in the flourishing of sedentary villages in the Southwest and the subsequent development of large pit house villages around 500 BCE. Maize de ocho, also referred as the eight-row maize, offered advantages that were better suited to the arid conditions of the region and facilitated the growth of agricultural communities. Maize de ocho is characterized by larger kernels and eight rows of kernels on each cob, hence its name. These larger kernels were more easily milled, making the processing of maize more efficient for the communities. The improved milling process allowed the production of finer flour and enhanced the overall utilization of maize as a food source. The adaptability of maize de ocho to arid conditions was crucial in the Southwest, but water resources were limited. The varieties of maize demonstrated better tolerance to drought and was more efficient in water utilization compared to earlier maize varieties. Its cultivation supported agricultural productivity in arid environments and helped sustain sedentary communities in regions where water scarcity was a significant concern. The availability of maize de ocho is a reliable and productive crop, provided the stable food source that really enable larger and more permanent settlements, especially in the American Southwest. With surplus food production, communities had the ability to support a greater population, leading to the formation of larger villages and the construction of more sustainable pit house structures. That appearance of larger pit house villages around 500 BC marked a significant transition in the social and cultural organization of the indigenous communities in the Southwest. These villages consisted of multiple interconnected pit houses, which served as dwelling, storage spaces, and communal areas. The presence of larger, more permanent settlements facilitated social interactions, trade networks, and development of complex social and economic systems. It is very important for us to note in this podcast that the adoption and cultivation of maize de ocho were not the sole factors responsible for these transformations. The development of sedentary villages and complex cultural complexity in the Southwest were the results of a complex interplay between environmental conditions, technological innovations, social interactions, and cultural practices. This crop is one of the many factors that really led to phenomenal growth, especially in the Southwest, especially as it provided a reliable food source, enhanced agricultural productivity in an arid environment, and contributed to the development of larger pit house villages and, of course, larger civilizations to be able to populate and grow. And that really led to complex social systems. So let's move a little bit farther as we move into our chapter and talk about the Chaco phenomenon. The Chaco phenomenon represents a significant cultural and architectural development in the ancient Pueblan civilization. The Chacoan culture, centered in Chaco Canyon, region of present-day New Mexico, is known for its remarkable architectural achievements, including the construction of massive stone buildings known as the Great Pueblos. These pueblos were multi-story constructions characterized by intricate masonry, large rooms, and interconnected passageways. The great pueblos found in Chaco Canyon, such as Pueblo Bonita and Chichilcoatl, served as ceremonial, administrative, and social centers of the surrounding communities. These structures were not just dwellings, but also communal spaces that facilitated social gatherings, rituals, and economic activities. The Chacoan society demonstrated advanced engineering and architectural skills as they were able to construct these large-scale buildings with precise alignments to celestial events. The strategic position of doorways and windows in relation to the movement of the sun and moon suggests an intimate connection between the Chacoans and astronomical observations. The Chacoan phenomenon also involved the construction of extensive road networks called Chaco Roads, which connected various Chacoan sites throughout the region. These roads served as trade routes and facilitated cultural exchange among different communities within the Chacoan society. The reason behind the rise and decline of the Chacoan culture and the purpose of the Great Pueblos continue to be a subject of scholarly debate even to this day. Some theories suggest that the Great Pueblos served as the centers of religious and ceremonial activities, while others propose that they represent symbols of political power and social hierarchy within the Chacoan society. And as we see the emergence of these Great Pueblo settlements as part of the Chaco phenomenon around 900 CE represents a notable development in the ancient Puebloan civilization in the Southwest. The construction of these massive stone structures, along with the development of road networks, highlights an architectural and social complexity of the Chacoan society. And so now we really want to discuss also the groups that lived along the Pacific coast of North America. Several of them continue to live a very sedentary culture that really thrive by relying on the rich abundance of the ocean resources surrounding them, rather than agriculture. These cultures developed sophisticated systems to exploit the diverse marine and terrestrial ecosystems of the coastal region, provided them with a diverse range of resources for sustenance and material needs. This Pacific Coast culture had access to a wealth of resources, including various fish species, sea mammals such as seals and sea lions, shellfish, waterfowl, game animals, wild plants, and timber from the surrounding forests. They developed advanced fishing techniques, such as using nets, tarps, and hooks to catch fish and other marine species. They also employed skilled boat building techniques to navigate the coastal waters and engage in maritime activities. And with this, we see the utilization of ocean resources truly played a crucial role in the economies and cultural practice of these coastal cultures. Fish and marine animals were not only important sources of food, but also provided materials for making tools, clothing, and other essential items. The collection of shellfish and other marine invertebrates was a significant activity, providing a valuable source of protein and shell material for crafting ornaments, tools, and utensils. This reliance on ocean resources also shaped the social organization and cultural tradition of these coastal cultures. Coastal communities often form complex social structures with specialization in fishing, tool making, and other specialized activities. They engage in trade and exchange networks, facilitating the circulation of goods and ideas along the coast. The abundance of these resources along the Pacific coast allowed for the establishment of sedentary settlements characterized by permanent or semi-permanent dwellings and villages. These settlements often feature intricate architecture such as large plank houses and totem poles among the indigenous people of this Northwest coast. And as we wrap it all up for that particular part of the chapter in the podcast, we see that the sedentary cultures along the North American Pacific coast flourished, especially by harnessing the abundant ocean resources available to them. These coasts developed sustainable economies and intricate social structures. Their reliance on marine resources shaped the way of life, cultural traditions, and the formation of permanent settlements along the Pacific coast. So now let's move a little bit closer to us and discuss the Cahokia. The Cahokia are located along the Mississippi River from present-day St. Louis, was a significant center of the mound-building cultures of North America. The Cahokia site is one of the most prominent and well-studied archaeological sites associated with the Mississippian culture, which flourished from about 800 CE to 1500 CE. Cahokia was a complex and densely populated urban center that emerged as the focal point of the Mississippian civilization. It served as a hub for political, economic, and religious activities, drawing people from surrounding regions to engage in trade, social gathering, and ceremonial events. And the true hallmark of the Cahokia architecture was its large earthen mounds. We often hear much about them still to this day, especially in our region of the South. These mounds were constructed by piling up earth and clay, creating monumental structures that serve various functions. The largest and most impressive mounds at Cahokia is known as Monk's Mound, which stands as one of the largest prehistoric earthworks in North America. It is believed to have served as a ceremony and administrative center, possibly housing the residences of ruling elite. The layout of Cahokia featured a central plaza surrounded by mounds with residential areas and smaller satellite mounds sites extending outwards. The community was organized into a hierarchical social structure, and rulers, priests, artisans, and farmers playing distinct roles in the society. Cahokia's prominence is evident from the archaeological remains found at the site, including artifacts such as pottery, tools, and ceremonial objects, as well as evidence of long-distance trade connections. The influence on Cahokia extended over a vast territory, with evidence of its cultural and economic interactions reaching as far as the Great Lakes regions and the Gulf of Mexico. The decline of the Cahokia and the Mississippian civilization is still the subject of scholar debate, as we've said about many other cultures and civilizations. But factors such as environmental changes, social and political upheaval, warfare, and resources depletion have been proposed as possible causes. By the time European explorers arrived in the region, Cahokia had already been abandoned and its significance had already diminished. Today, Cahokia Mound State Historic Site preserves the remnants of the ancient city and provides insights into the vibrant and complex society that once thrived there. Cahokia served as a significant center of the mound-building culture in North America, particularly associated with the Mississippian civilization. And of course, as we have said, the impressive earthen mounds and complex urban layout point to its role as a political, economic, and religious hub. The legacy of Cahokia continues to intrigue researchers and offer valuable insights into the rich cultural history of ancient America. And as we wrap this chapter up, chapter 10 in the podcast, that we can really see so much about the Americas. We know that the earliest recognizable civilization in the Americas emerged in Mesoamerica, a region that encompasses present-day Mexico and parts of Central America during the Archaic period. This Archaic period in Mesoamerica spans from around 8,000 BCE to 2000 BCE and is characterized by the development of sedentary settlements, the cultivation of crops, and the emergence of complex cultural traditions. During this Archaic period, Mesoamerican societies transitioned from a predominantly nomadic or semi-nomadic lifestyle to a more sedentary way of life. They began to establish permanent or semi-permanent settlements and engage in agricultural practices, such as the cultivation of maize, beans, squash, and other domestic plants. This transition to agricultural and sedentary living laid the foundation for subsequent developments of complex civilizations in Mesoamerica. Mesoamerican civilization of the Archaic and formative periods made significant contributions to agricultural, trade, art, architecture, written systems, and religious practices. Their achievements set the stage for later advanced civilizations that flourished in regions such as the Aztec and the Mayan. It is important to note that while Mesoamerican witnessed the earliest recognizable civilizations in the Americas, there were other cultural developments occurring in the region as well. For example, in South America, civilizations such as Norte Chico and the Chauvin culture emerged during the similar time frames, leaving their own legacies in terms of architecture, societal organization, and cultural expression. And as we see, human migration to the Americas is estimated to have occurred very early, by at least 1500 BC, with the earliest recognizable civilizations emerging in Mesoamerica during that archaic period. The archaic and subsequent formative years witnessed a transition to the sedentary lifestyle, the development of agriculture, the rise of complex cultural traditions, and laid the foundation for later advanced civilizations in Mesoamerica and beyond. Thank you.
This podcast episode has been produced under a CC by NCND license. All episodes in this series are made possible through the efforts of Lisa Naminkus, Christopher Gilson, Crescentio Jackson, Ryan Pierce, and Amelia Brister. Thank you for listening.